Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm going to state the obvious. I'm a member of the press, breaking news. But throughout my career, people in the press have said a lot of really charming things about me. I'm being sarcastic, critical, mean stuff. Some of it downright laughable, though. I mean, who cares either way? But possibly the one that cracked me up the most, because it was so totally absurd, was in a book called The Fortune Tellers, Inside Wall Street's Game of Money, Media, and Manipulation. It was written in the year 2000 at the pinnacle of the dot-com bubble. I had been a reporter and anchor at CNBC for 2 years by then, arguably right at the height of the channel's popularity. And the author actually was Howard Kurtz, who's here at Fox now, but he was at the Washington Post. This was way before I personally knew him. He described me in the book as, quote, a swimsuit model. I was like, wait, this is supposed to be a nonfiction book? I mean, I'm a lot of things, but no, I doubt I'd ever be mistaken for a swimsuit model. But thanks anyway, Howie. During my college years, though, I was obsessed with the models in the Sports Illustrated swimsuit issue because to me, it was aspirational because the models they used were healthy looking. They had muscle, Elle McPherson. They had curves, Rachel Hunter. Their personality showed through, Paulina Portskova. But my favorite was always Sports Illustrated's three-time cover girl, Kathy Ireland. I mean, she looked like she was having fun. And to me, a California girl, she embodied the Golden State. I mean, we're the exact same age, both from Southern California. I mean, granted, at 5'10", she could step on me, but there was just something different about her. Little did we know she would become something very different. Unlike legions of models before her, Ireland was not about to let an industry known for slapping expiration dates on women define who she was or who she would become. Try jumping from SI, Vogue, Cosmopolitan, Bazaar, and Mademoiselle covers to the cover of the business world's Bible, Forbes magazine. How did Kathy the supermodel become what she is today? A self-made capitalist running a massive furniture and home goods empire that does billions of dollars more in sales and licensed retail than Martha Stewart, Ralph Lauren, or Tommy Bahama? I am so honored to introduce you to my friend, Kathy Ireland of Kathy Ireland Worldwide. Hi, sweetie. How are you?
Oh, Liz, I'm great. It's so wonderful to connect with you. You're amazing. Okay, first of all, you are the ultimate gorgeousness supermodel. You're way too smart for that industry, however, and congratulations for everything that you do. I love your reporting. I love how you dig deeply and you just, you work with such integrity. And it is cherished and admired and respected by countless people around the world, including me. So it's always great to be with you, Liz.
Kathy, thank you. Kathy and I, just so you guys know, we met 12 years ago. And gang, where we met should tell you a lot about her business chops. We met at Warren Buffett's annual Berkshire Hathaway shareholder meeting. And you were there because your line of furniture had a prominent place at the Berkshire-owned, Nebraska Furniture Mart, right? How'd you get your goods sold at the largest freestanding furniture store in the world?
You know, our very first retail partner in the home industry was Nebraska Furniture Mart, NFM. And Irv Blumkin, who is the grandson of Mrs. B, Rose Blumkin, who came to this country virtually penniless and started Nebraska Furniture Mart, he came into the showroom. We were new in the industry. He looked at me and he saw team members who, you know, I started this company by hiring people, investing in people. And I could tell by the way he was looking, he thought I had an entourage. So he says, all right, Kathy walks me through the showroom alone and we'll see if she knows her stuff or not. And, you know, if she doesn't, I'm not going to buy and I'll tell everybody. And so I took a deep breath, walked Irv through, and I am so grateful because he gave us a chance. And you know that those people who give you that opportunity and you just know you got to do well by them, because that was a big deal. How Nebraska goes, the country goes. He gave us our first opportunity. He and his wife, Susie, have become such dear friends. And he's best friends with Warren Buffett. And so that's how we came together. And something, Liz, you and I have in common is we both had paper routes along with Mr. Buffett. And you've got a great arm in those annual newspaper tossing competitions. You're very strong.
Well, a lot of people don't know, but yes, Warren Buffett and Bill Gates had a newspaper route, and so did you. To me, you know, I think of you as this supermodel, but let's go to when you were that young and had a paper route and your life growing up in California. What age was that?
You know, I started my paper out when I was 11 and a half. When I finally came of age, my dad shoves a newspaper under my nose with an ad that read, "Newspaper carrier wanted, are you the boy for the job?" And dad knew the reaction it was going to get. I wrote to the editor. I said, "I'm not the boy. I'm the girl. I deserve a chance." First day, it's New Year's Day. Papers are extra thick with those inserts. And I'm a scrawny 11-year-old wondering, what have I gotten myself into? And I'll never forget pedaling up a steep hill. I see this man at the end of his driveway. And as I approach him to give him his paper, he looks like he's clearly upset about something. I don't know what. And as I hand him his paper, he starts screaming at me, you know, "What are you doing here? This is a boy's job. You have no business being here. You're never going to last." And Liz, I didn't let him see me cry. But to this day, I am so grateful, because there was no way I was going to let him stop me from this. And how could I? Because what would it do to the next girl who would want that opportunity?
My. That is an amazing story. So who was this cretin who yelled at you? My goodness.
Yeah, I mean, hearing people saying unkind things to you, I got to say my prayers, because it makes me want to go beat them up. But but anyway, he was just a sad, grumpy man. Mm-hmm. And thank you to him, because I kept that route for 3.5 years. And each year I won Carrier of the Year for my district. My dad always said, he gave me great advice. He said, "Kathy, always give 110%. If the customer expects the paper on the driveway, you put it on the front porch." So that was the foundation of learning to under-promise and over-deliver.
Yes.
It's the foundation of our business today. It's so simple. And it's, you know, today when a team member gives a great presentation, we say, "You got it on the front porch."
Oh, I love that. Okay, so you're very, very young. You're doing your paper route for a couple of years. Now take me to when you turn 16 years old. You're growing up now in Santa Barbara, California, because that's the year you got discovered. What happened?
You know, I was 16 years old. For my birthday, my parents said, "You know what? We didn't have the funds at the time for piano lessons or ballet or anything like that. Our town just opened this new modeling school, LaBelle, Betty Mazzetti's LaBelle." So and I was quite a tomboy. And I think they thought this might just, you know, give me a little poise or something. They teach you how to walk and match your clothes and all of those things. I was not model material. I was a beach rat. My nose was always peeling. My hair was always fried. But the look of the moment was always changing. I mean, it's just, it's continually changes. And I also had one eyebrow.
Oh, right,
before I discovered
thick
tweezers.
Eyebrows. Yeah, thick eyebrows.
So the two was an illusion. A scout from New York came, asked if I'd like to go to New York for the summer. And I said, "Thank you, but no thank you." I just didn't seem like it was even a possibility. They said they would advance the money. If I really didn't like it, I could go home. And I thought, you know what? This is an opportunity it's not my dream, my plan, or anything I ever thought, but maybe I could save money for college or to start a business. The entire time I worked in that industry, I was trying and failing at businesses. Had one of those endeavors worked out sooner, the modeling career would not have gone on as long as it did.
Isn't that interesting? But what was your parents' reaction? Oh, somebody says, ooh, we'll pay you. Come to New York.
You know, they were hesitant. My mom actually came out with me for the first 5 days. I stayed in one of those model apartments, and she wanted to make sure everything was okay. I was really naive. I mean, my whole world was as far as I could pedal my bicycle, and then I was in New York City, and it was very eye-opening. I met some wonderful people, and I met some... The industry attracts some not so savory people as well. So it was an eye-opening experience for sure. But I'm grateful because it ended up being a great education.
Well, what was your first paid fashion shoot? For which company, which designer? Because I love, this is the 80s. I just love reaching back to that time.
Oh, goodness. There were some great designers and photographers. I did a lot of work with Peter Lindbergh in Europe. But my very first job, it was for Modern Bride.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
Tell me about your first paid cover. Which magazine was it?
Oh, my first paid cover. That was Italian Vogue.
Oh, how chic.
You know, I didn't know it was going to be a cover. Didn't know that either. But that was a good experience because Peter Lindbergh, such a kind man, and such a great team of people. So that was good. That was a good experience.
Then we lead. There's so much in between. But how did you get chosen to be in the SI swimsuit issue? Because that is the holy grail for models. At least it certainly was in the 80s and 90s. Tell us what it was like the first time you got the call.
You know, Julie Campbell, who started that issue, the editor, and she went to heaven last year, and I miss her dearly. We were so close. But she called me into her office, and she said she liked me because I was a California girl and I wasn't too skinny. It's like, okay, I like that because I like to eat, so that's good. And the first job, she took me on a ski story. She used to do that with girls to see how they traveled. And she asked if I could ski. I didn't lie, Liz, because I had skied once. She didn't get specific. I went on a run called Sesame Street and Mammoth in California. But I always wanted to ski. I wanted to learn. I didn't have the opportunity. So I was like, yeah, I can do it. They took me up to the top of a mountain on a ski cat in Taos, New Mexico, really long skis. And I just remember just crashing into this poor photographer. They ended up having me stand there and hold the skis, and nobody got hurt. It was fine.
Well, that to me is very interesting that they would almost give you a tryout to see. And it would be the complete opposite. I mean, snow versus sunshine.
Right. I mean, she really wanted to see. She didn't like drama on the trips. It was in the beginning, we had no hair and makeup. We did our own. And I just thought it was fantastic because I was being taken to these amazing locations around the world. And that was back in the days when magazines had budgets they'd bring you in a few days early just to get tan.
Seriously?
You know, you can complain, you know, yes, there's a lot of hard work that goes into modeling and all, you know, all of this stuff. But, you know, there were some some nice benefits as well.
Well, you made it look like so much fun. You made it three times on the cover, 13 different seasons of that magazine. But I always remember the famed sparkly bikini cover. The title was She Reigns in Spain. But one thing, I scrutinized all the covers, and it always struck me how minimal the makeup was and no nail polish or long nails. Were there rules?
Oh, you are so observant. Yes. I mean, Julie liked it to keep it really simple. And so that made it easy, you know, just less challenges.
So you're doing really well. You're hugely famous. You're on posters in dorm rooms. Was there a pivotal point during the 13 years you were profiled in the SI swimsuit issue, Kathy, that you began thinking, wait a minute, these guys are making oceans of cash off my image. I mean, I could be a brand. I could do this myself.
You know, Liz, I wasn't thinking so much about what I could make off of my image, but I knew that I could do a business. I mean, I knew I could start something, and I recognized that, you know, that the modeling industry is so fickle. It's about a look of a moment that is continually changing. You have very little control over how you look. And I didn't want something as important as my paycheck to be dependent upon how someone else perceived I look. So I really wanted to start something that was not dependent on that. And we started with a single pair of socks. And at this point, I was an aging pregnant model at my kitchen table. It's 1993. And I was offered the opportunity to model the socks. Not quite as glamorous as it sounds. It was a small budget, no location. That was exciting to me. And it seemed like a wonderful place to start. And that's when we started with the surprise factory inspections, family-based focus groups, loved the socks, took out the first in a series of loans, loaded the backpacks, hit the streets, presenting the socks to retailers. The rejection, thank goodness I had so much experience with the rejection from modeling, so it didn't bother me when the doors would slam. I mean, no just meant, okay, now we're talking. I'll come back tomorrow. Maybe your circumstances will have changed. Maybe someone else will be in the decision maker. Maybe you'll be in a better mood. But, you know, if we're not reaching for the sky, if we're not, you know, trying, you know, to, if we're not scaling and climbing, and we miss out on so much. While we're on the climb, we head for success, and we can't be confined to someone else's opinion of us.
Absolutely.
And have anything like that slow us down or stop us.
Well, what's amazing is that one of the biggest names in retail at the time said yes, Kmart.
Yes, they did. And that was, you know, that was amazing. We sold our socks. CEO called me in one day, and he informed me that the socks were a blowout. I was kind of mortified because we had our first baby in diapers, and a blowout has a very different meaning. And he's like, nope, this is good. The merchandise is, he looked at my face. He's like, no, this is good. It's moving out faster than it's coming in. And so they asked for exclusivity at their channel of distribution. You know, we came to them as a vendor, and we grew our brand there, and it was wonderful. Grew our brand to it changed the way we ran our business. We started by you know, there were times we'd sleep in airports to save money. And
seriously?
You know, just when we were scheduling, it's like, okay, this will save. I mean, we were very frugal starting out. We were in the red starting out. We were in a handful of sporting goods stores. And but, you know, we believed in the product. We believed in what we were doing. We knew we had something of value. And but those days were long gone. And then we get a phone call that they're experiencing some challenges. Next, there was a bankruptcy. And those were interesting times. Got a call from the bank who set up a lunch for what they politely referred to as the situation. And they shared that, you know, we were responsible for the entire liability. If it didn't work out, they could take away our homes. and very chilling. And you know what? I should have known better, Liz, because at that time we had 35 team members with families on our payroll. And it was the largest bankruptcy in retail history. And my heart still breaks for everyone who lost their jobs, their stocks. Yet they, you know, they came out of that. We stayed with them through it. And, you know, we were in debt and starting over, but starting that climb once again. And it's so many powerful lessons. And I'm so grateful for that.
Well, you just gave about 38 powerful lessons in all of that. And I think one of the most important that I'm seizing upon is you don't just walk out the door and accept a no, or let it dissolve you into backing away from reaching for that dream, which you just kept reaching, girl. I mean, rugs, furniture, you expanded exponentially after the socks.
I'm very grateful. We we pulled a lot of 24/7s, but we love what we do. And today we're working in so many different sectors. And it's really about not letting someone put limits on you, not letting someone else's opinion of you define or destroy you. There's ups and downs in life every single day. You got to get back up again.
This is Everyone Talks to Liz, and we will be right back. When Forbes put you on the cover with the title Supermodel, Super Mogul, and that to me indicated, oh my gosh, she's like hauling in billions of dollars with a company she started with socks. I mean, this is unbelievable. Supermodels like Kate Upton and Hannah Jeter have said they want to model their careers after you. How does that make you feel to know that other models aspire to have a career like yours? And don't they really need to understand that if you think rejection was tough at the modeling level, business is way harder?
It is hard, and it's humbling. And I love having the opportunity to mentor. I've had some incredible mentors in my life, and to be able to mentor others is a gift. I mean, brand building is hard work. But something that I share with young people, especially young women, is, you know, don't be afraid of rejection. Listen to criticism, because sometimes it can be wrapped in a nasty package, but you've got to look at it to see, is there anything I can learn here? Or do I just throw it away? Or how can I do better? Even if it's not communicated nicely, what can I learn from this? And something that I've learned is no limits.
You have partnered and licensed with Home and Garden, as you said, fashion, travel, weddings, insurance. How involved are you in making sure your name and brand don't get misused or diluted?
Liz, that's a great question. I get accused of being a control freak. I prefer to think of it as passionate. I care.
You know who said the same thing? Beyonce. She said, You know, women are called control freaks, but we're just doing what men have always done, and that is ensure that the brand and the name behind it remain platinum.
Yes. Well, you know, we work very hard to earn trust. It just, you know, it's something you have to earn, and it can be lost instantly. So it's important on every level. And, you know, just so many lessons throughout my life. My mom and dad, oh, such great mentors. My mom was the ultimate entrepreneur. She did everything from babysitting businesses. She was an Avon lady, housekeeping business. She made dresses in the 70s and sold them at art fairs. I made jewelry to go along with them. Then she became a nurse. So she could just always do anything. And so that also gave me a lot of courage to know that I could walk away if something wasn't right.
Amazing.
And, you know, and just, and then really, I think something that I had to learn to overcome was finding my voice. Working as a model, my job description was basically shut up and pose. And when I had an opportunity, I was thinking about this when you were talking in the opening, I had an opportunity to speak, and a critic very publicly said I had a voice that could kill small animals. And I hope it's not true, because I love animals.
What?
But I have to admit, I was 25 years old, I couldn't order a pizza on the phone. I had like this really high, squeaky voice. They thought I was a kid making a prank. And so years later, I was giving my first business talk. It was with Ernst & Young. And I was so nervous. And I'm looking out the curtain. I'm seeing people filling into their seats. One of my business partners looks at me and he says, "Stop it. I can tell you're nervous. It's not about you. Look at those people. They paid for their tickets. They are organized childcare, transportation, all of that. You know what that is. You have information they need. Your job is to take care of them. Get over yourself."
Good advice.
I was like, yes. So it was great advice. So I get out there and I give the talk, and halfway through, about three quarters of the room had left. And I thought, well, it's a business. You know, they probably all have business meetings to go to. And my team assured me afterwards, no, they did not.
Thanks.
I did a really bad job and I had a lot of work to do. And another thing I recommend is don't surround yourself with yes people. Be with people who you want, encouraging people, but you want people who love you enough, who are going to help you get better and do stronger. And a lot of times when you're doing so, you're going to fall on your face the first few times, maybe the first few hundred times, but you just have to get up. And if people can learn from my failures, I am so grateful.
Well, you lived it. That's the thing. And these are the very people like you we bring to our unbelievable audience. We have people who are listening. We have a million downloads. I mean, it's unbelievable how successful this has become, because they want to hear about the failure so they understand, okay, it's supposed to feel like this. It's, you're supposed to get punched in the face. You're supposed to stumble and fall. It's okay. That means you're in it. That means you're in the arena. What did you find in this documentary that you could pass on to people listening?
You're not alone. That's one thing. Liz, I can't think of a more difficult time to be a young person or an old person. I mean, it's just, it is a really busted, broken world. Yeah. There's a lot of hard things. There is so much hope. And I am so grateful for that. Yet, education is a passion of mine. I've served on boards of directors for education for 30 years. I continue on the advisory board of the James Madison program at Princeton. One of the founders of a startup. Now it's a pre-K through grade 12 Christian College Preparatory School in Santa Barbara. And worked with mentoring programs around the globe. I love kids. Education is so important. And reaching young people to let them know that, you know what, you're not alone. And it's not just the kids, but it's their families. It impacts everybody. And this documentary, it's done by Laura Morton. She's a 21-time New York Times bestselling author, and Vanessa Roth. She's Academy Award winning director. These women did just a powerful job. When I connected with them on this, it was like, how can I help? I believe in what you're doing. I'm getting phone calls because of my work in education. I get phone calls every week. Like, you know, I'm worried about my kid. I mean, there's some serious, serious issues that just cannot be overlooked. But I do really think the first step is knowing that you're not alone. Yes. It brings a lot of peace and a lot of comfort. You know, we're going through this together, and we'll get through it. The young people in the film, they're so brave, and I'm so proud of them for sharing their stories. And it's helping a lot of people. Really exciting.
I that's it. I mean, you have helped so many with that documentary, and I hope people listening who suffer from anxiety or have children who are suffering from anxiety, I know I've had my moments with anxiety, need to watch this, because it is a lifeline in many respects. You know, we're talking about documentaries. It's pretty interesting. Lately, there has been a resurgence in these documentaries about the supermodels of the 1980s. Is that interesting to you? I mean, have you watched any of them? And what do you think?
Oh, I need to. I've been hearing about some really well done ones. And And it is. It feels like a lifetime ago. I am working as one of the producers of a documentary on Julie Campbell. Her family is doing this. Jill Campbell, her daughter-in-law and team. And Julie was just such a leader, such a pioneer in so many ways. And what I learned from watching Julie on the SI shoots is I watched her fight for the integrity of her brand. She was a woman editor. It was a man's magazine. There weren't a lot of women there. And I watched her work with a lot of guys and really stand firm and fight to make it what she wanted it to be and what it needed to be. And that was inspiring to me. That really is, you know, when I'd be trying to come up with a new pose and running out, I was like, oh dear, what do I do now? running out of poses. Just thinking, I got to get on the other side of the lens. I got to get there.
You've gotten on the other side of the lens, the other side of the wallet, the other side of the business world. And we are so proud of you. As we finish up, I do think it's really important for our listeners to understand how important religion is in your life. How has that given you strength to be that person who maybe pushes back and says, no, I'm not going to do that, or no, I'm not going to cross that line, and I am going to raise my kids and raise my family with the integrity that I believe is worthy of me?
Oh, thank you, Liz. You know, I grew up with no religion, really. My mom became a Christian when I was a teenager, and without telling me, she stuck a Bible in my suitcase when I was traveling to Paris. I was lonely and jet lagged. I opened it up, but, you know, just out of boredom. I was rebellious. I was questioning authority. Mm-hmm. And as I opened up and read, I knew what I was holding in my hands was the truth. And I knew if he was with me, who could be against me? I then, you know, I went on to, so much of it I loved, I'd read other things and think, oh, well, that must be a translation or a typo or something. So I was picking and choosing. And I've made so many mistakes. I've made so many big messes. And I'm so grateful. I love the scripture that says the one who's forgiven much loves much. I love a whole bunch. And I'm so grateful. And yes, I mean, my faith in the Lord, that is my hope. And when I experience this world, this broken world, and I know how much God loves every tongue, tribe, and nation, and my heart right now is smashed over these precious hostages.
Me too.
That it's a hard world, Liz. It is a hard world. And there is so much suffering. There is, you know, wherever we are in the world, we've got some dear friends in Burma helping the people there who are being, you know, slaughtered by their government. We look at the Uyghur Muslims in China. It's just, there's so much suffering, yet that blessed hope, that eternal perspective, and that love, that's what gets me through that relationship. Liz, if I didn't have that relationship, I wouldn't be talking to you right now. I can tell you that much. But that's everything. And it helps me to, I don't like to think, to refer to it as religion. Sometimes I'm even hesitant to say Christian because that means different things to different people. And we have so much everything from prosperity gospel to replacement theology, which are such lies. It has nothing to do with God or his word. You know, his love of Israel and the people, and they're not perfect. None of us are. His love of all people.
Yeah.
But I just, you know, when I experience bigotry and anti-Semitism and all of that, it's heartbreaking, but it's also, I'm encouraged because we've got a lot of work to do. There's a lot each day. And I'm grateful for every moment, every day. And people need to, they need to know the hope.
You've just given some of it to us, Kathy. The world's a better place with you in it. Oh, my goodness. I'm so happy to share your story with our listeners. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Liz. Thank you.
The one, the only, Kathy Ireland. What an inspiration, as beautiful on the inside as she is on the out. In fact, even more so. Now my swimsuit model days actually never began, but one day Kathy and I are going to get in bikinis in California and jump in the spray of the ocean, because we're California girls. And thank you all, as always, so much for tuning in. And I hope these are making you, you know, more energetic to reach for your dreams and understand it's not easy. It's not supposed to be. That's okay. I'll see you Monday through Friday, 3 p.m. Eastern on the Claim and Countdown. Want to listen ad-free? You can do it with a Fox News Podcasts Plus subscription on Apple Podcasts. And then Amazon Prime members, you can listen to this show ad-free on the Amazon Music app.
I'm Guy Benson. Join me weekdays at 3 p.m. Eastern as we break down the biggest stories of the day with some of the biggest newsmakers and guests. Listen live on the Fox News app or get the free podcast at GuyBensonShow.com.